Okay, good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting to order to the Story County Board of Health. First thing I want to do is I want a movement to approve the agenda as sitting out in front of us and ask if there are any additions to the agenda. Hearing none, approved. Now we need approval of minutes, and those are given to us by electronically beforehand. I had a chance to review them myself. They look fine to me. Is there any move for approval?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion or additions to the minutes? None? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. And minutes are approved. Consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. And the first consent agenda is consideration of the contract between the Iowa Department of Natural Resources and Story County Board of Health. We need approval of that.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, and consent agenda, and all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, and the consent agenda passes. Public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Does anyone wish to bring up an issue that is not on the agenda? You do?
Go up to the podium.
Actually, the podium, and introduce yourself.
Right here?
Yep, please. Oh, nice. So you're not on the agenda, okay. So yes, you can.
Okay. Hello, my name is Todd Anderson. Thank you for having me. I am a prevention specialist for community and family resources out of Hamilton County. We serve an 8-county area, including Story County, as well as Hamilton and others. What I have provided before you is a flyer for mental health first aid. I'm in charge of a 3-year grant that is fully funded, so the operative word here is free. I do offer free mental health first aid training that we kind of liken to CPR, in which I show people strategies on how to recognize somebody who may be living with a mental health issue or a problem, or who simply may be distressed. Importantly, how to approach them with the proper language and strategies, and also how to refer them to the appropriate services, whether this is inpatient, outpatient, or whether it's just providing some literature to help that person get out of distress. I understand that mental health is something that is somewhat of an uncomfortable issue to broach, to talk about, so I do make it a little bit more palatable for people who are a little reticent in talking about mental health issues that are just an increasing issue, more prevalent today as ever. This is a free 8-hour training. I can come to anybody that's requested, or I can also offer these unsolicited. On another sheet, you see that I do have scheduled trainings around an 8-county area, including those here in Story County, but also as well as one in Boone that's more toward the later part of the summer. But I will be adding trainings as the weeks come along, as by request or just simply unsolicited as I post as well. If this cannot be done in one day, I can split it up in 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, however many days it takes to get about 8 hours worth of training in. And it is also CE or CEU based, so anybody who does need those kind of credits, it is recognized as well from various public agencies to fulfill that. So again, I do provide free 8-hour training in mental health first aid. Again, it is to enable people to better recognize those who may be living with an issue, how to address them, approach them, and how to refer them in some degree to some manner. So I'm just leaving this for you just to draw your attention to it. I will be attending future meetings as well with more input as to how well the training is going, as well as just to solicit my services too with that. So
you need to be on, this is a minor point, but do you need to be on our agenda from here on out?
I will be on the agenda from
okay,
here on out.
Got
so
it.
I do appreciate the time to allow okay. me with this quick couple minute elevator pitch. But yes, I will get on the agenda in the future to provide more in-depth analysis of these trainings.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Have you contacted Mary Greeley Medical Center or our Homeward yet?
I will be going into contact with numerous people around the 8-county area. It's a little bit more time than it takes to get hold.
Well, I mean, just in contact with them to help set up
that's what I'm going to start doing. Yeah. I'm making my way to various counties, being here for just a few months, so kind of getting my feet wet. So I do appreciate the time.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so now, under any questions about that, or any questions? Mm-hmm. That was interesting.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
I like that.
Yeah, it'd be great.
All right, so now we're going to discuss in consideration of local public health services, the fiscal year 2020 application. Les White. And again, for the minutes, could you please, when you speak into the microphone, identify yourself as a speaker?
I'm Les White, Director of Mary Greeley Home Health Hospice in Historic County Public Health. And I just wanted to bring forward today our application for the Iowa Department of Public Health fiscal year 20, and see if you have any particular questions related to that, and ask for your opinion.
So where is this in here? Is this? Okay. Is that this?
This. It would have been on the agenda center.
Oh, okay, got it. Okay, okay. All right. Okay.
Do you want one to look at?
Do you mind?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, just one.
I don't know.
You got it?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yes. Yeah.
Here, you can, I got. Yeah, I've seen it. I've actually seen this, yeah. I think I've actually seen this. I looked at it in one of the things that came over, so I have looked at it myself. Okay. And I'm getting all those things done like you tell me to do on the computer, right? It's all coming through. Okay. Any questions at all with about the application?
No.
It's pretty straightforward. I kind of remember I reviewed it real quickly, and so I just now once I recognized it. Okay. Right. Any questions at all for Les?
I have none.
Okay. All right. So we need a motion to approve. So I need a motion to approve the application.
So moved.
Any second?
Good.
Second? Okay. Do we have a second?
Yeah, John.
Okay. Dr. Kluge? All right. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. It passes. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, health impact assessments.
I have some extras for the audience if anyone wants to see them as well. I'll leave them up here. What I'm going to do is go over a brief presentation. It's actually a lengthier presentation, but I'm not going to cover the entire thing since you do have a copy and you do have a lengthy agenda today. It's a project that's been in the works for about a year and a half. I'll address that too, but just give you an idea of where this may be headed as well. Feel free to stop me with any questions as I go too. For any specifics. So through my literature review to come up with the presentation and the research that I did to get to this point, I relied heavily on my background as a city planner, community regional planning, and my contacts and my my availability to find sources through the American Planning Association. So on each of the slides, you'll see the sources, and then there's a resource page as well. I won't cover those, but there was a substantial amount of literature review to come up with where we are thus far. Health impact assessments aim to make health impacts of public decisions explicit. And kind of like that image shows on the right, rather than making the decisions in silos, rather than making a land use decision without considering the health implications, health impact assessments take a different viewpoint, almost a paradigm shift of sorts, to link everything together and do away with those silos in the decision-making process. Where did this come from, and why is it before you guys for an update and before the Board of Supervisors and other entities as well? The C2C plan is the cornerstone to Capstone. It's the Story County's comprehensive plan that was adopted in 2016 by the Board of Supervisors. Incorporated the notion of a health impact assessment in the goals and the strategies that are defined in the foundation chapter of the C2C plan. It seems a little bit odd, but it's actually under housing goal number 3. That's one of the main categories in the C2C plan. And it just, the strategy does state, in order to understand and address public health implications of housing strategies and projects, consider conducting health impact assessments when approving new or undertaking policy making with regard to public infrastructure and development. So how that translated once the plan was adopted was language in the implementation matrix that was adopted about 4 months later by the Board of Supervisors, and just was simply determine the viability of using health impact assessments. So that's basically where we are. We're still determining the viability and going forward with the implementation matrix. So the next few slides are the foundational elements of what health impact assessment, what they include, some descriptions of the elements within, and then open up for some discussion and questions too, as you go to. Any questions thus far, how we got here?
Do you have an example of where we may have had this in place that this would have had an impact on in the
conditional use permits?
Yeah.
What really kind of comes to mind are the wind turbine conditional use permits. Since the initial regulations were drafted, additional health impacts have been studied and then more clearly understood. That had we known those at the time the regulations were drafted and the setbacks were being measured and all that, it may have had some implications on how wind turbines were sited.
Okay.
That's one that comes
to
mind.
That's one.
Okay. Or, you know, while we did deal with rural roads and gravel roads, are we having the right right-of-way to make it available for all modes of travel? Looking at that vein as well. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the different decisions the Board of Supervisors ultimately as the policymakers of Story County reach,
right.
This would say you have that vein of a health impact assessment built into that decision. At
okay.
some level, and that there are varying levels, and I'll talk to those shortly.
Thanks.
And how I got involved was it was put on my work program through the Board of Supervisors. So this is the overall presentation. It is quite lengthy. The who, what, where, when, where, how, why, and how I'm really going to breeze through. You have those. Again, this is was given to the Board of Supervisors last July to really start this, to start further investigating the viability of this. This is the homework that I did to that point. I did, as I said, looked at several sources to come up with what a health impact assessment was or is, and I like these two descriptors. And I promise there's only maybe two more times I'll read from the slide. But this says the one tool planners can use to inform community decisions about the health implications of development policies or proposals is a health impact assessment. The goal of HIA is to apply available research about health impacts to specific land use questions to develop evidence-based recommendations to inform decision-making. So as I said, that example of the conditional use permit for wind turbines. It's a land use decision incorporating the health impacts into that decision-making process. These are a couple more clearly defined definitions of a health impact assessment. It really is, as I said, bringing all the pieces together and looking at the decisions and policies from a more holistic standpoint. It really is becoming a direction within the world of planning that planners see as it's a necessity. It's been a hole that's been there for years, like a black hole that we've recognized, those in the profession we've recognized, and have not really had the tool to make that leap. And now as the profession has really become more engaged and accepted this as a need to build into that process, we're developing more and more toolkits. And I have a couple examples of toolkits to share. The goals, why we build that into the public decision making, really, there's so many needs. We have benefits that come from it, and it's an ability to really identify those pitfalls that may come from a decision before it's made, and then we're trying to clean up, come back and be more proactive rather than reactive. And this is a list of all the different goals, just a few of what I found throughout my research. I think it really, going back to the fundamental issue, though, it does look at everything in every vein that we possibly can. And that we possibly can being the keywords. We're not going to catch everything. Four basic types. There's a rapid one. You just do that in a short time frame. A desktop one, and as I said earlier, there are toolkits that help planners as these get implemented. An intermediate one that really you spend a lot of time, months. Really, this would be a health impact assessment that we look at almost on a countywide basis, all the policies and procedures, and make sure that we're meeting our goals. And then a comprehensive one, years to take. Sometimes we do an RFP to bring a consultant on board. What my research has found is communities are slowly, as they embrace this, doing the rapid and desktop to really begin to integrate the philosophy and then moving forward along the way. Okay, this is not, I'm going to skip through these, but there's like anything in planning, a who, what, where, when, how, why. The process, irregardless of whichever level of assessment you do, you have six steps. Just like any good planning process, really, because when you come down to it, health impact assessment is a planning tool. You screen, you scope, you assess, you come up with recommendations, you report out on those, and then obviously the ongoing monitoring and evaluation. And this is probably the other slide I will say. As the U.S. faces increasingly complex, interrelated, chronic, and infectious health conditions, the HIA is a tool to instigate interdisciplinary conversations leading to solutions that improve health. Story County has such a long, definite history of interdisciplinary working together. We have the interagency review team. When we look at subdivisions, the health department's part of the table, planning and development, our secondary roads, our conservation. And this is just adding another element to that discussion, too. Relationship to other efforts, I'm glad Les is here. The Story County, or the Community Health Needs Assessment, is something done every 5 years, and I think it will be starting in 2020, if that sounds correct. But it does not replace that Community Needs Health Needs Assessment by any means, but they can be very complementary efforts. And the Community Health Needs Assessment can help set some foundational scores that if we do go down a health impact assessment direction, we can use to monitor our progress and set metrics to help us along the way. So NACO, which is National Association of Counties, has put together one toolkit. They've part of the Healthiest Cities and Counties Challenge. It's an evidence-based practice that really, maybe this will work. Yeah. it won't work. But you can access it online. I can get you the link as well. But it really is something that's almost deployable immediately. It necessarily cannot be customized, however, for the community, but it's a way to get into the process. So the next steps, really where we are right now, is, as I said, I did my homework to get to last July, following the direction of the Board of Supervisors, and then spent some time last fall. I was actually supposed to be here last fall, but scheduling never allowed. So I apologize for that delay, and thank you for letting me come before you this afternoon. Is this the direction that Story County should go in? That's a basic question. Now, what's happened since I presented to the board almost a year ago, unbelievably, we have a new board, and not all three members have received that report and had an opportunity to provide input. So I will be going back to the Board of Supervisors to make sure that this is part of the direction in which they want to go. But just for some food for thought, if this does go forward, we'll be looking for direction from all the stakeholders, of which the Board of Health is a key one, in that you set policy for the environmental health and then other aspects of Story County government, help us determine who the decision makers are and who the additional stakeholders are through this process. Again, I do need to go back to the Board of Supervisors. That will be later this spring, early summer. As I said, my resources, I did hyperlink those initially. I haven't checked those in the past 8 months, but I can get you the resources if you'd like. And even since my initial presentation, I've sat through a couple additional webinars, which have been very beneficial to help me further understand this. I think it's a really, it's a key next step that Story County should go, a direction in which Story County should go, and I'm very excited about it. I think, at least from wearing my planning hat, I'm proud of my profession that we're ready to take that leap, but I'm also saddened that it's taken this long. That wasn't there at the emergence of planning. Whenever you want to define that is, that we didn't just say, okay, we're planning everything. I'm looking at every element. So with that.
How would this impact the current discussions we're having on CAFOs? Would this be something that you would put your say in, even if the state doesn't allow us to do anything? Would this be something that you would say, well, listen, this is, you know, we need to do one of these HIAs before you let this confinement facility go up?
Well, that's a great question. And I think, without getting myself into too much legal trouble, I think the county could, if we have a health impact assessment protocol, procedure, whatever, built into our policies, ordinance, however that is ultimately defined, that could be used, but it would be part of the overall master matrix recommendation and decision making, because I think we're going to have to go back to agricultural uses are exempt from county zoning authority and all that, but it's maybe another tool in Story County's very limited toolbox that we could use to say we have real valid concerns with this.
Or that it seems okay.
Right. Exactly.
From a health standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So how long do you think this would delay that process of getting something like that approved?
Like a CAFE?
No, yeah.
Oh.
For example. Or anything.
It would have to be that rapid assessment or however it's designed, because we, Margaret well knows, those deadlines that come from the DNR are tight, and there's no wiggle room in that, even if Story County has adopted a whatever it is review process, which Story County has gone above and beyond what a lot of counties do in reviewing them.
But what about, let's say, a subdivision, for example? You talked months here. You said months and
weeks. And that's why I said the rapid or the desktop toolkit. That's what we would use for those land use decisions. And Mark, that's a great question. Ideally, it's just part of the process. It becomes no different than a traffic impact analysis that Darren's looking at to determine the levels of service on the roads and the potential impacts.
Okay.
That being said, probably if we go in this direction, the first few applications will probably take longer than as we begin to learn how to do
get our feet wet.
Mm-hmm. and understand maybe this is what we think we mean, but it's not worded that way, or we're not truly understanding what we're asking. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So if an issue arises, what is the first step to take that you would handle?
Well, that would be part of the report that's given to the Board of Supervisors. Going back to the description or the example of a subdivision, let's say it's a 45. This is all hypothetical, and keep in mind I have not been in the planning and zoning world for 5 years now. Let's say there's a 45 lot subdivision, all on septic systems, but they are high Advantech systems won't even work there. It's a very challenging soils for Margaret and anyone to design the septic systems. But it's still coming forth to the Board of Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Supervisors for rezoning and subdivision. Internally, the county staff has some concerns on the potential water quality impacts of septic systems on that site. Maybe technology has not gone that far that site can handle it yet. This could help identify that, and if the regulations are worded such a way that there's a relationship between what the findings of the health impact assessment are and the ability of the board to approve a subdivision or rezoning, that may be a way to say, okay, we understand you want to subdivide, but maybe not right now. Or, as Dr. Passion said, maybe on the flip side, you have this designed amazing. It's, you know, I know there's some concerns, but the health impact assessment shows that you will not have any impacts. And then it's the ability of the board to approve it, too. It just gives us the additional information to look at the impacts.
Yeah, so you're basically proposing another level of basically exposure or study that may need to be done if the County Board of Supervisors adopts this.
Right. And it's not necessarily going to be a ordinance, mm-hmm. but just part of the review process.
Right, part of the review process.
And to be honest, I have not even gone down that rabbit hole yet to see how that's designed and how that's implemented. That's going to be some direction from the board to say, okay, we've done this viability assessment. It looks like it's feasible, or no, let's not look at it right now. And then if they say, yes, it's feasible, then I start looking in more depth at the toolkits and determining what's right for Story County. And I'll question, I'm sure, how many counties in Iowa have done this? None that I know of. I could be wrong, too, but none that I've...
And I apologize for being late. I was on a phone call I really needed to deal with.
Once you become an ex officio member,
I guess.
You just slide in whenever you want.
I really
it's all right. It's all right.
Well,
it's
kind of a groundhog cake.
That's right. It's perfectly fine.
Wasn't able to hang up. Okay, so could I briefly get kind of the background here? Because this is new information for me as a supervisor. So you brought it to the Board of Health, right, Leanne?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of a brief introduction to the board last July.
Okay.
So that I could go forth to I've been to the Quality of Life Alliance. I've been to Planning and Zoning Commission. Yes, I've been to Planning and Zoning Commission, the Board of Health. And I don't know if you heard me say, the intention was to be here last fall. But I think we had this thing called winter in the way, too. So
have you talked to the county's legal department about this?
No, not yet. Okay. I'm still in the homework phase.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I'm thinking the first person who gets turned down because it's saying, sorry, wait, it's not good from a health standpoint or whatever, mm-hmm. I can see maybe an attorney showing up.
Yep. So, yeah, and that's no different than the adoption of transportation impact analyses or assessments, too. There has to be that rational nexus between, or even in some cases among, the policies or the background information that goes into reaching that final decision to make sure the legality of that decision stands.
I guess that's, you bring up a real good point, and I would think that as long as any type of health impact assessment is uniformly used, that I don't think we can just say this is what our county does, you know, and it doesn't have to be the only thing, but you know, yeah, but I think, but I actually think it would be a great tool as we continue to struggle with groundwater issues, CAFOs, new type of industry, all these type of things. Not only housing developments, but just everything that's out in those unincorporated areas. It would be a nice to, if I was a board of supervisors, I'd like to kind of have that. To, I might not be able to make a complete decision with it, but it would be nice to know. Information is never bad. It's an interesting thought.
Because once it's done, it's too late. Now you've created this health problem that might not have happened if we would have stopped it.
Yeah, but I like the legal idea. That's probably a very good idea that you might meet with legal.
Maybe, yeah. Are you planning on putting it before anybody else, any of the boards or commissions that have advisory roles before you bring it to the Board of Supervisors?
I can return back to. The process was defined last. I think it was last July.
Okay.
And then later this, my plan was later this spring, early summer, to bring it back to the Board of Supervisors for a recap of discussions with the Board of Health, discussions of Planning and Zoning Commission, the Quality of Life Allowance. as the ultimate determinants of how this goes forward, the board can hear the input from those other entities too.
Got it.
Again, this is just the homework phase of it. And now kind of wrapping up the homework phase, and then we'll enter into the next steps phase.
Okay, thank you. Okay. But we catch up.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very very interesting. Okay. Do you need anything from us?
No, not at this time.
Right.
I just wanted you to be kind of up to speed, so if it does become a direction in which Story County pursues further, environmental health and the Board of Health will have a key role in that, I believe. At least from all my research, I do see that that's a linkage that has to exist.
Okay. Very good.
And I'll be back for another item.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, so now we have a discussion of the Story County Swimming Pool Ordinance. You know, in my practice, this is the nicest time of year because I actually start to talk about things like swimming pool safety, mosquito repellents, sunblock.
Do you give them out little samples then too?
Yeah. No samples anymore, but it's kind of like it's like a rite of spring. I gotta start talking about sunblock. Sorry, go ahead.
In front of you, you have
Matt, you just for the minutes.
Oh, yep. It's Matt Corey, Environmental Health. The Chapter 64 Aquatic Facility. We're not gonna go through this. I just handed it to you, so if you guys need something to sleep tonight, you can read that. This is our fifth year, coming up on our fifth year. I started a couple weeks ago doing these for this year. In the 5 years we've done this, we follow the Iowa code for our pool inspections. They've written the code for everything. Locally, Story County doesn't have any ordinance that pertains to these swimming pools. And over the years, I've discovered things that are lacking from the state code that I would like to see adopted locally. And that's in there. Just because there's so many things going on today, and Margaret's got some code that needs to get pushed through a little bit faster, that's why we're not going to go through this. But I just wanted to give you a primer and kind of show you. In the 5 years, we've never really looked at what these inspections are. And after you see this today, you'll kind of understand why I'd like to get some local code. That's just the rundown from the last 5 years here. The number, you'll see annual, the facility inspections and venues inspected. The facility is basically, you know, like Furman Aquatic Center, that's the facility. The venues are the pool, the wading pool, the slide, that's a venue. That's how it's defined in the model aquatic health code that the CDC has. This is just the definition. It's a long definition because they break it clear down to every little thing. Facilities, again, the facility is the whole park or a hotel. Just a graph of the number of facilities that were inspected each year, and then the orange is facilities with violations.
So over 50% in each one.
Mm-hmm. And it could be just little things to something major, to, you know, a broken main drain cover, or it could be that they didn't have the cap in the barrel for their chlorine. You know, that's a violation. So it could be anything from little to major in this. So yeah, and you're right, it's basically over 50% all the way across. 2016 was quite the year, actually.
80%.
Does that include contamination as well? These violations?
What do you mean by contamination?
Bacterial load?
No, these were just during the inspections. I didn't include, like, the facilities have to do a monthly bacteria sample every month. And if it does come back positive, then there's steps that they have to take. You know, if it's their spa, then they have to close their spa. But if it's their pool, they have to resample. That was not included in those. But it did include, you know, whether if it was a chemistry violation, whether their disinfectant was too low, the pH was off, so anything like that. That was included in that. The venues closed. I broke this down because, like, a hotel could have a pool and a spa. The pool could have been fine, but the spa's chemistry was off. So it was technically, the facility wasn't closed, but the venue, like the spa, might have been closed. And so that's, and again, you know, 2016, there was 15 of them closed. And you can see most of the closures were because of the chemistry. The chemistry is the yellow. So like 2014, 8 out of 8 were closed because of the chemistry. I think 2015, one of them was the one oddball was a main drain that was covered that was broken. And then they stayed pretty constant with the chemistry violations. Now we break it down to just the hotels. The hotels, because of turnover rate at the hotels, you could go to one hotel 1 year, talk to the manager, the next year, you go inspect that hotel again, it's a different manager. You go across the street to inspect that hotel, and it's the manager that used to be across the street, we're now working at this one. So it's different front desk staff every time. So you can write up a hotel on several violations. They get it for a while, but as soon as the turnover, you know, things don't get passed along, you know, to make sure that this gets done. But as you can see, we've gone up from 14 hotels in 2014 to 17 this year and last year, or 2018. And I think there's two more that are coming on the books, two new hotels, so we'll be up higher than that. But every year, I broke this down. The dark orange is hotels closed, whether it was both of the, if they had a pool and a spa, whether one or both were closed, it's just the hotel was closed. That's how that's broken down. But I just wanted to show you the violations compared to the closures, where like 2016, they had 15 violations, 8 of them were closed.
Matt, do you get any pushback when you go into a hotel and say, okay, we're closing your spa down, and they say, well, too bad? Do they just say, oh, yeah, that's fine?
No, it's pretty much, that's it's fine.
Yeah,
they understand.
Right, I know, but you know, I don't know if
I have never had any pushback. I've had one that's been kind of difficult to keep closed until, you know, it's like as soon as you leave, they take down the sign and
yeah, right, okay. And do you give them like little inspection signs to say pass that they can put up?
No, okay.
The reason I brought this up was I was recently someplace, a tourist place, and every restaurant had right on the window, mm-hmm. health inspection passed. Mm-hmm. And the date that it passed, it was right there on the front window.
Well, in California, they had their grading, the A
to
right, F.
Yeah, they didn't grade, they just said passed, and it was right there. You know, mm-hmm. when you're looking at the menu, there's this big sign.
How many inspections do you do at each place?
Interesting
a year,
thought.
We do them annually, and then there's some that, you know, we go back and check on whether they fix the things during the annual inspection.
So just once a year per?
Yeah, at least once a year.
So if you really, if you went every other month, all those numbers would be way
up. Yeah. you'll see.
Are any of these, of this information published anywhere? You know, like used to be with restaurants.
But that is something I have in the draft code as publication of the inspection reports, whether we put it on our website or however. But that is something that I would like to see, because just like the state, you could go look up the food or the restaurant inspections and stuff like that. I would like to see that available. When we first took over the contract, the state of Iowa had talked about taking or adopting the Model Aquatic Health Code, which is CDC's. Basically, they came together, wrote this whole code for swimming pools. And the state had looked at adopting that, but the engineer for the state had several amendments he wanted to it. And it never went any further. They just kind of dropped it, and that's been 3 years ago. That carbon monoxide is in the CDC's code, and it requires a carbon monoxide detector in the equipment room if they have a fuel burning, which most of them do. There's a few of them that have electric heaters, but most of them are fuel burning. And I walked into one the other day, and I texted Margaret and I said, we need something in the code that requires a carbon monoxide detector, because there's nothing in the city of Ames code, fire code, or building code that requires a carbon monoxide detector in these rooms. When I opened up the door, all I could smell was exhaust. And the picture that's on here, it's a little harder to see on that one, but right here, that is completely rusted through. There is an interior line, it's a dual wall vent, so there is still somewhat of a structure inside
of
that.
That's single wall right there.
No, it's dual wall.
Up above it'd be dual.
No, up above that is single, but
it's
right,
no,
right there
should
is
be double
dual wall.
Yeah.
But you can see all these little spots are completely rusted through. And this one, I walked in, this was the first year that we did inspections. When I walked into this one, I walked right back out of the equipment room and called the Ames Inspection Department. They were there the next day.
You know, we found in those, we've deal with these quite often, mm-hmm. but we found out that what's causing a lot of that is they've got muriatic acid in that room and they've got chlorine.
Yep.
And between those two chemicals, if it gets on metal of any kind, it just rusts it away.
Yeah. Well,
even if it doesn't have any carbon monoxide, it's the chemicals will do it.
Yep. This is a copper pipe here.
Yeah, it turns
and that's
green.
All green.
Yeah.
I have a few more pictures of this later. But this was the most recent information that I could find, and this was published in July of 2007, and it was between 15 years between 1989 and 2004. So it's kind of dated material, but there were 68 incidents of CO poisonings at hotels, motels, and resorts. 772 were poisoned. Out of those were 711 were guests, 41 employees, 20 rescue personnel. And out of those 772, 27 of them died. 16 of those 68 incidents were caused directly by the pool heater. And that extends back to not requiring, you know, there's no requirement to have a CO detector in the equipment room or the pool area. And it's been on the news several times. I think there was one in Des Moines just a few years ago where the pool heater was the cause of the carbon monoxide at one of the hotels downtown in Des Moines. So I do have that in the code, and I do have a requirement that the date of installation be written on the outside of the detector, and that it be replaced every 3 years just because of the environment that the detector's in. As you can see by all the metal that's in those equipment rooms, what they look like. I wish I had a picture of it. We have one hotel that this is the third inspection. It was just built 3 years ago. The vent pipe on that is already rusted. After just 3 years, there's big, huge spots of rust. I mean, it's just surface rust, but it's already. And this one has their chemicals are stored in a separate room from where the pool heater is, but the pipes come in through the tubes for the barrels that are stored in another room come into the controllers. But it's just, you know, the chlorine in the air and everything else to that. And that's just what I stated earlier. This is the daily logs. There's a requirement in the Iowa code that, you know, you have to do two manual testing a day of chlorine, your disinfectant, and your pH. And then for pools, you have to do, if they have what's called an ORP controller, it's basically simple as what your the strength of your disinfectant in the water and the pH. It's just a controller with a digital readout that gives you those numbers. You could write those down every 4 hours for pool and every 2 hours for the spa. And they require a tighter because the spa is warmer, the bacteria likes that environment better than the pool. But this is a week. This format, and this is one thing that is difficult in the inspections. Every place you go to has a different sheet, so it's really hard. You don't see the same thing, but you know, it's like here up here at the top is Sunday. They didn't do anything until late night, and then it's sparse in between. And then I like at the bottom where it says we need to be filling out a log. And then I just got some more examples here of how it doesn't get done.
Inconsistent.
Yeah.
So this looks like I see what you're saying. So you're trying to get this out there.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, is there, you talk about the state guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
But they sound like they're a little lax.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like other, like would someone look at this and say, this is the strictest pool facility rules in the country?
I don't think so, because this is a lot of.
Well, that's kind of what I know, where there's a basis or a standard.
A lot of this is taken from the Model Aquatic Health Code.
Okay.
That the CDC, and there are several states, counties within the United States that have adopted that.
Got it. So you do have a standard you're looking
mm-hmm.
at. It's
yep.
just not. Not to say this, it's like,
because
boy, you know, I hate
since
this.
Okay. The state oversees the program, we're basically contractors for them,
right.
And they have in the code design requirements that the state's engineer has specifically said he wants in there to see. We can't, as the county, just adopt the model health or the model aquatic health code because it's different than what the state requires. So
okay.
We can pick and choose, which the Model Aquatic Health Code from the CDC, they recommend they don't necessarily say you have to adopt our whole code, but here, take what you want. And they give you resources to go through that, to pick and choose what you want out of that. And
we will be able to do that?
As far as I know, none of this has been in front of the county attorney's office yet. That's something, like I said, it's a primer to start moving into that direction.
Okay. Well, very good.
There's some of this is from the Model Aquatic Health Code. There's one thing that the state of Virginia has, and that's the 64.11, the posting of water test results. And that is, they require their latest test result to be posted out in to where the patrons can see it. Date, time, and the result. And then they also have to have what the acceptable range is, you know, for whether it's chlorine or pH, so that the people can look and see on the wall and say, hey, the chlorine tested 1.6, and it's supposed to be between 0.8 and 8, you know, so we're good. And I like that idea. And it also, I think, would help because, like we see with these logs, we get lots of empty spots where if the patron is able to see, well, when they go into the pool, they look on the wall and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and the last test was written down at 8 o'clock that morning, and they could see that it's supposed to be done every 4 hours. That's written on this little sign that test is supposed to be done every 4 hours. You know, like it kind of makes them more responsible. Even if they go in, the hotel staff or whoever, whether it's hotel staff or what are the student housing or whatever it is, even if they go in and walk into that facility and see, I don't want to say that not do the test or go in and read the, but marks up the data, it's at least getting them inside that pool enclosure. And if there's some kid that's floating on the water, you know, they'll see it. It's maybe the kid just fell in, but at least it's not an 8-hour gap of somebody not going into that pool enclosure.
Right. So I think it's a very good idea, you know. So what's your next step at this point?
The next step would be to work with the county attorney's office to make sure that everything is.
And then would this then come in front of us next or the Board of Supervisors next?
It would come in front of you guys first.
And then we would look at it and then we'd give our recommendations and then it would go to the Board of Supervisors.
Correct.
Well, very good. I hate to shorten you. It's just we've got a bunch of this stuff.
So. You're fine. Yeah. I'll just go through these real quick. That's, you know, some of the things I see. That's the wall in one of them. This is 4 years difference in the inspection and a different ownership of the hotel. It's a different angle, but you can see, you know, this is all good. 4 years later, this is what it looks like. That's the test kit that they're supposed to be using twice a day. This is the test kit that they're supposed to be using twice a day. I don't know if you can see this, but this cap is entirely full of water, and this is dripping down. And I don't know if it was live or not, but I wasn't going to find out. That's the surface of the pool bottom there. This spa is no longer there. I closed this one down because this was broken here, and they ended up taking it out and not putting it back. But that's the broken spot there.
Yeah, really.
This is that one with the picture that I showed you with the carbon monoxide with the rusted through vent. This is another picture. But you can see how the acid is leaked out through this controller. And this is the copper pipe here. This is another side of that same vent there. This is etched. Somebody, I don't know, they poured chemical in off the side of it and it etched the surface. You know, this is something that they must not have ever seen that was broken. And then the no diving sign in front of the pool rule sign.
funny, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
This is, I don't know, it was some kind of, I don't know, it's an indoor pool, whether somebody had a ton of sunblock on or what, but that's the main drain there, and that's light, you can see all the way down. This is their emergency phone. The year before, I wrote them up for not having the phone, and they must have put the phone in, but then ended up taking the photo off the cord.
Oh my gosh.
This is the city of Ames. They had this redone in the spring, and the contractor didn't put grit in. So the second or third kid that went running out into that waiting pool after they opened up just went right down onto his back. So they had to sandblast it all off and repaint it. It was almost a 2-week process. This I'll show you real quick. This is the first year that we did inspections.
Stacy, as you can see, the Furman Aquatic Center is a very popular place during summertime. Let's take a look here at the 50-meter pool. You can see a few people here are swimming laps, and also there are quite a few kids bobbing up and down in the pool. They're having a good time. But if you take a look at the slides here, normally you would see quite a few people lining up on the stairs over there, ready to go down the slide, but not today since they closed them down. And it happened after an annual machine inspection at the Furman Aquatic Center. Health inspectors found a couple of cracks in the support structure of boats and dropped into slides. Since then, officials have found a third crack. And yesterday, after Parks and Recreation leaders spoke to the manufacturing company Splashtacular, they were advised to close the slides until the company could send up a structural engineer to check out the structure.
That's supporting the slide.
But yeah, the one crack was big enough that I could take the whole packet of paper that I had in my hand and run it up and down, and they never seen it.
Matt found that.
Yeah.
Wow. And you didn't even get credit.
No.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'll never go swimming. Unless it's in the ocean.
I have been in the water. My daughter, several of the Ames hotels, they allow you for $3 or whatever just to come in and swim. And my daughter's friends, several of them go up there and do that. And when my daughter's with them, she'll call me and say, can we go to this hotel or this one? Because she knows that.
Well, thank you very much. We'll be looking forward to seeing that how that pool ordinance goes. Okay? All right. Sounds good. So next, any other questions for Matt? Yeah? Oh, okay. Okay, so Leanne Harder is up again. Watershed Assessment Implementation Matrix and Working Group Program and Recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. Okay.
Okay. this agenda item deals with a watershed assessment that was conducted over the past couple years through working with a consultant out of Minnesota. The assessment itself is actually on the county's website, and I can give you all that link. The first few slides go over kind of the report overview, but I just want to spend a minute going over the process, how we got there, because you guys are a little bit late to this party, so to speak. So about 3 years ago, right now, Story County Board of Supervisors directed staff to develop a request for proposals to send out to receive proposals back from consultants to develop a watershed assessment that would look at our watersheds on a HUC 10 and HUC 12 basis. HUC is the size of the watershed. We received several proposals back to that RFP for several reasons. One, the nature of the project. Two, kind of the leadership that Story County had been already doing from a watershed planning perspective with involvement with other watershed management authorities. And third, kind of an overarching theme we heard through the interview process was no other county is doing this in the state of Iowa. So we want to be on the ground floor doing this. And we really kind of hung our hat on that too, because we, to my knowledge, we still are the only county then that has had this type of watershed assessment completed. Like I said in my first presentation, that watershed assessment was the homework piece. We didn't know what we didn't know yet at that point. So last August, our consultants, Emmons and Olivier Resources out of the Twin Cities in Minnesota, did present to Planning and Zoning Commission, Conservation Board, and the Board of Supervisors. And the board did ultimately receive and accept that proposal. So that report has several sections, and I will send a link. The report itself, the assessment, is on the county's website. It's, I think, like, it's lengthy, about an inch in length. But it does delve into, on a huck-by-huck basis, what the really what the conditions are in our watersheds.
Such as chloroform or coliforms, nitrates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Not to that level of detail if we did not have that type of information available.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of areas where we don't have water quality sampling or a history that we could determine, which is one of the recommendations that you'll see shortly. But like I said, it was the homework, so we could figure out what we knew and where we didn't know.
Right.
If Matt's reading does not help you sleep tonight, go to this link too, because while as interesting it is, it's redundant and it does. It's amazing the amount of information that's contained in it. And Stephanie, I'll get you the link to share. I should have done that before today's meeting. But the report itself talks about the water resources in Story County, why the report was drafted, the purpose of the assessment. There are some prioritizations of watersheds within the report. There's also a set of recommendations. It suggests monitoring recommendations. They did look at our county ordinances. Actually spent a considerable amount of time looking at our county ordinances. They also discussed the county's role, the Board of Supervisors, the Drainage District Trustees, and how that role affects water quality and quantity and our overall watershed health in Story County. Looked at the County Road Authority, you know, how we're designing our bridges and stream crossings, and then also model water stormwater ordinance. So we took that to the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors, I'm going to skip this slide. The Board of Supervisors then directed staff to form a working group, an internal working group, to start taking us to the next step. Looking at the recommendations from EOR, the consultant, and then some of the recommendations that we have come up with through our different facets in county government and our involvement with water quality and quantity, and just develop an implementation matrix. So we started in the fall of 2018. It was Michael Cox, who's the director of conservation, Deb Shildroth with Board of Supervisors, myself, Jerry Moore with Planning and Development. Who am I forgetting? I think that's it.
Just four or five.
It was a small group. We then put together that matrix and presented it to the board, who accepted it in December of 2018. Then in through the budget process for the upcoming fiscal year, Story County Conservation requested a full-time position to just do watershed coordination. That led to a re-emergence of the watershed group, and we reconvened in January 2019 with a change in membership. And I thought I had that in here. Okay, so the new group, as being reconvened, does include Margaret Janes from Environmental Health, and we will be recommending to the Board of Supervisors and later this month that we add Darren Moon, who is a county engineer, and Scott Wall, who is the clerk for the Drainage District Trustees. He works for the Auditor's Office. and Keith Morgan, our emergency management coordinator. Add those to this internal working group. So why we're coming out is to really give the overseers of the staff members, but then those that have an interest or basically a stakeholder in the direction and the steps forward Surrey County goes, an update where we are and some understanding of what's happening next.
Will water sampling be a part of this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What that looks like, I don't know yet.
Okay.
Yes. And I'll get to that shortly here.
Okay.
The group did meet on February 21st, March 7th, and March 27th. We also did get an opinion from the county attorney's office that we are subject to the open meetings requirements of Chapter 21. So if anyone would want to join into our meetings, our agendas are posted, and they are available for public. We started by reviewing the membership of the group, and that's where those additional those additions for consideration are being brought forward. We reviewed internally the implementation matrix that the board accepted in December, one, to understand why it was put in there with the new members of the group, and then modifying some language, creating assignments, and really reviewing the priorities that are in the matrix. We developed a goal statement, and then we developed an overall game plan on how we go forward. How do we make sure that this work and the matrix and all this momentum does not just get shelved? That we start doing sampling. I mean, what does that look like in the future? So, again, the goal statement is, Stephanie, this was on there. Was this in the packet?
Yeah.
Okay, the goal statement is this first part of what was on your agenda. I'm not going to read it by any means, but it just really, the key is those four bullet points. The Watershed Working Group communicates current and planned efforts, identifies gaps, coordinates joint efforts, and communicates overall county efforts and recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. So the idea being that this working group continues and is really kind of, at this point, the de facto watershed coordinator for all of our different interests and areas. So the game plan. I'm here today before the Board of Health to give you the update. Planning and Zoning Commission will meet tomorrow and receive the very same presentation. Conservation Board will meet next Monday, and then we're going forward with this to the Board of Supervisors on April 16th. What we will ultimately be asking the Board of Supervisors is that they approve this goal statement that's in this document. It was on your agenda, but I have an extra copy if you'd like to have it. We'll ask that the goal statement be approved, and then the various recommendations and strategies as amended be readopted, in essence. And we are asking that formally Scott, Wall, Keith Morgan, and Darren Moon be added to the working group.
Okay.
Supervisor Merkin is still on that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So the game plan does include revamping Story County's website so that we make sure our message that water quality and quantity is a priority in Story County. When you try to find out about watersheds and water, just watershed planning in general, it's there. You just have to know either where to go or be willing to go three tiers down. Next, we'll be preparing, or not next, but these might be happening in order simultaneously, preparing outreach materials, getting the word out on what's been done, what we're doing, and why we're doing it. And part of that is tackling the strategies such as water sampling. Such as working with the communities on developing model stormwater ordinances, such as looking at our floodplain regulations in total to make sure that we're not hindering water quality and water quantity. We'll establish a review and update timeframe. Our intention right now as a working group is to meet quarterly with updates back to everyone, and then amending our comprehensive plan. Any questions?
Okay.
I have a couple questions. Is this going to include the review of subdivisions and the runoff and control of the impact of downstream erosion as well? I don't see it listed on action
step. Yeah, it is. It's going, there's a stormwater ordinance and erosion control ordinance that's being drafted by the Planning and Development Department, and that's actually been before the Planning and Zoning Commission. There are two separate strategies listed in there. I can't tell you exactly where. I think one is under regulatory. I think they're both under regulatory or programmatic. But yes, and that's one of those strategies that's already underway, and we see that coming before the board. What did Jerry say, late spring or later this spring for action?
They've got the latest draft done.
The latest one I have.
Okay. Yeah, and so if I understood what was said this morning, is that then Jerry wants to put it back in front of stakeholder groups before bringing it to Planning and Zoning Commission. And so May or June is when he said he thought it might be ready to come to the Board of Supervisors. So he wants to do this one more pass among all the stakeholder groups before it goes to PNC.
So for the Board of Health, you guys are a little bit behind on this process. And so I will get you the assessments. I'll get Stephanie the link to it on our website. But you're a key stakeholder and component of this.
Yeah.
And at this point, we're moving forward.
Well, I just bring it up because some of you are aware of what our situation was out there at Hickory Hills when that Cameron Estates went in, and it was a disaster because they didn't look beyond where they were dumping that water. They just stopped, and, you know, that was bad. So I'm just hoping that this will include stopping things like that from happening again on these subdivisions.
That and the draft ordinance is applicable to unincorporated Story County that the county is drafting right now, but hopefully we can work with the smaller communities too to incorporate it countywide that meet their needs.
So I do have a question going forward. So how is the staff involved from Environmental Health? How are they woven into that with P&Z about like the stormwater ordinance? Is there overlap?
I mean,
we've been reviewing it since about the start. They share drafts. I just haven't gotten more briefs upon, but they're very generous.
Okay. I like that definition. Thank you.
And they've been involving interagency review throughout on that ordinance, too,
they've been doing
on the draft language.
Good. It's about time.
Yeah, it's good. I agree. I think it's great.
Good. Excellent. Okay. Do you need anything from us?
I left my agenda back there.
That's okay.
I forget how it was worded.
Okay. And you can, it would be nice if we got kept up because this is a health issue. Water and health go together. So, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Please, for our three presenters that we have left, please do not be offended if I try to. We're kind of getting a little bit late over here. So, Story County Board of Health? No, that's okay. You're fine. I mean, you know, we had our Board of Supervisors, remember, come in late.
At least
all I can say is we're talking about Christmas.
Jeez.
Oh, of course, Margaret isn't out yet. So I guess I should be saying that. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Les White, Director of Mary Greeley Home Health Hospice in Story County Public Health. There's really just three quick things that I want to bring to your attention. First one is we did have our local public health contract compliance review, and I'm happy to report that we had a great survey and there were no additional follow-ups needed as we had met all the requirements of the local public health services contract. Second of all, I'm sure all of you knew that or have heard that United Healthcare is pulling out as one of the Medicaid MCOs. So I just want to assure you that we're well aware of this. Mary Greeley will be having a contract with the new company. They're called Iowa Total Care. We will work with all of our patients in Story County to make sure that that's a smooth transition. they never know in relationship to their care. We will continue the care even if there is a little bit of a break in coverage, I guess. And if you have any questions about that, always feel free to give me a call, and I'll be happy to visit with you about that. The last thing is just kind of a little FYI. Some of you receive emails from Patsy Beasy. As of yesterday, she has retired after 39 years of service. So the emails that you get from Patsy will now be coming from a gal, Tricia McDonald. We'll be covering some of her job duties, I guess, until we get that evaluated and decide how we want to handle that position.
Okay.
I'm Teresa Ferrari with the Story County Public Health. Just a few things. So flu is still going on. It's not still has never reached what it was last year, but in fact, CDC issued a health advisory alert last week to clinicians that influenza remains high in the U.S. And we've had like an increase in the hospital too. I think it's kind of leveling off now. We're seeing mainly H1N1 or H3N3, but last week the flu report, it comes out every week from IDPH, and it said it was mainly H1N1 last week. So it's been kind of back and forth between those two types, but it still has not reached anywhere near what it was last year, so that's good. Hopefully that'll start slowing down. Diseases have remained slow. We'll probably get an increase as it gets warmer out and people are eating the potato salad that sits out too long, or you know, just stuff like that. But and Nick visited with me last Friday and just said that he is to assure me that it's not if, it's when, and it's probably sooner rather than later that we will start to see measles, because it's increasing. It's already higher now than it was last year, the whole year of 2018. It's higher now than so far this year. So we will start to probably see it in Story County eventually. And then a couple things we're working on. We've met with RSVP, and we're going to set up some sort of a pod again like we did last summer, you know, with RSVP. I don't know exactly what we're going to do. Maybe we'll do the flu or maybe something with measles. Sherry and I will have to talk and decide about that. But and then I met with Dr. Passion, and we talked about there's this program through Pfizer puts it on, actually, a reminder recall system, and Dr. Passion wanted to learn more, a little more about it, so we had like a Zoom with the guy that runs it, and I think, you know, we both felt like it was a good program. You can either do children or you can do adults. Like for adults, for us would be flu, because only 45%, I believe, of 18 and older gets flu shot, so we'd like to see that number a little higher, and you know, the recalls and reminding people to get them. But we just needed your guys' okay to go ahead with that.
It's basically a postcard that Pfizer...
And actually, I brought the postcard.
Yeah, it's just a little postcard. And you send it out, and it's based... The Pfizer makes the pneumococcal vaccine. So they will send it... We'll try to send it out for people who are 15 months or older and haven't had their last pneumococcal vaccine, or if they're 4 to 5 and haven't had their last pneumococcal vaccine, because you give the pneumococcal vaccine with the other vaccines. And so that will be the reminder that they need to contact their provider's office.
Right.
And while Pfizer's name will be on it, we're also going to make sure that there's documentation on there that this is from the Story County Department of Public Health.
Or okay. The McFarland Clinic. McFarland, you know, Clinic, wherever they go, it isn't like everyone's going to come to us. It's just their health care provider, just encouraging
them. Right, Story County Medical Center, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's nice. The only thing that came up when I ran it by some of our nurses was they were concerned that Pfizer's name is on it, and people are going to say, how did Pfizer get our information? Mm-hmm. So we're still working on that. And so,
yeah, that might be a problem.
Yeah, right, if for privacy sake. So, but we think we'll be able to get around that.
I mean, yeah, and he seemed to think that.
Yeah, so we should be able to work through that. Those are the big things.
Take
so.
Their name off.
Hmm?
Just take your name off.
Pfizer, no, they won't
do that.
I think
it's supposed to have it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's another second step that they can do if we choose to do is give like reminder recall calls. saying that, but that's...
We're going to have to talk about that. But we like the postcard. So you need our approval for that, or?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. You just made the comment you wanted to bring it to the board.
Right, I do. I want to make sure that's what we're doing.
I don't know. Or if it's just...
It doesn't cost any money.
No, it doesn't cost any money.
Would anyone have any objections to us continuing to look into that?
I'm not sure what it's all about.
The confidentiality issues?
Well, that and postcard. Pfizer's going to pay to send them out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then how do they get listed who to send it?
From the public health department.
I would run the reports from IRIS.
So we're going to try to make it from the Iowa Department of Public Health or the Farm Clinic or whatever, so hopefully it's worded that this was made possible by a grant from Pfizer, but it comes from us. Mm-hmm.
Did they give you just the postcard and you address them?
No, actually a company addresses them. We don't really do anything except run the report for the people to send them to.
Here, can I see the postcard?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is more than just a little issue, you know, about that.
And this is just for the flu.
No, this is for pneumococcal.
Oh, pneumococcal, just for that. Okay, not the flu.
Because those tend to go together. So here you see, okay, Pfizer is here.
Oh yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. By Pfizer, no patient identifiable has been or will be provided to Pfizer. So to make this sentence make sense. Mm-hmm. It has to come from us.
Yeah.
Okay?
Why does it have to come from us?
Meaning from...
You or me or
right.
Wherever they go.
Because this statement, no patient identifiable information has been or will be provided to Pfizer. That doesn't make any sense unless it comes from us.
Mm-hmm. But then we're given permission for them to get this...
Yeah.
This website, CIC, what do you call that? Where you've got the list of people?
Oh, IRIS. Registry for Immunizations.
Yeah, is that
other
public
places,
information?
Minnesota.
Anybody?
No, just for certain people.
Just for you. Mm-hmm. So see that, I don't know, that's a touchy one, I think.
I mean, you know, anyone, I mean, his nurses can, I mean, there's certain people that have...
But I couldn't go on there.
No, right, you couldn't.
So... Yeah, I don't know. Let's try.
We haven't had a chance to talk about it for a couple of weeks. So why
I'd
don't we talk
by,
about it a
I'd
little
run
bit
it by
more?
The attorney.
Okay. I don't think there's. I think it will be more like people complaining. But I think let's kind of work on it a little bit more. Okay. Over the next month or so, and then at the next meeting we'll try to get back to you. Okay.
Sounds good.
But that is an interesting thing. When I showed it to my nursing staff, that's what they brought up too.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that they brought up was that. You know, everything else looked good. So I think we can continue to work on that. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's all I have.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Anything else?
No.
Okay. Denise Stanton.
What do you think? You're being awful quiet over there today.
I don't see a problem.
I think we may be overthinking it and stuff because they said in Minnesota.
Are these the same things that were sent to be put on the agenda? Oh no, never mind. I was just to say, don't give me paper if I've already got it via the online version. This is all new stuff.
All new stuff.
I didn't want to sleep.
So Denise Stanton, Youth and Shelter Services, and we'll be quick. So you've already gotten the report on, basically so I was sort of a month behind, but on all the sort of daily activities, and so it's been business as usual. We're finishing up a lot of the schoolwork, finishing up things like Project Alert. This week, pretty much everybody but me at YSS is at Teammates.
Yes.
Over in Boone,
right.
Where we bring kids from Boone County and Greene County and Story County, and they all go through the maze. And I would have a college student with me, but they're all there too, all my health promotion kids. So if you're not familiar with Teen Maze, it's sort of a life size as in it's a huge room with various rooms that kids go through, and they have to make life decisions at that point. So they might pull a card and it says, oops, you had unprotected sex. That's unfortunate. Now you're pregnant. And then they have to carry around like a, you know, a baby think it over or a pregnant belly for the rest of the time. Or they'll pick a card and it says, whoops, you got busted for drinking and driving. And then they go into an honest-to-God sort of jail. And we have honest-to-God lawyers and judges there going, wow, that was a dumb decision. Here's what you've won. And so it takes about 2 hours to go through the maze. And, you know, you spend about 10, 15 minutes in each room. And there's a party room, which is where all my college students are today. And they sort of do this mock party. And then it's like, oops, here's what you've won. And so it's, you know, all those choices that you make in life. And it's all seventh graders. And it's all mayhem all the time. It's the noisiest place you can be in Boone County this whole week. But it's pretty entertaining. So, and anytime you want to volunteer, just say the word. And we'll feed you, too. That's the good part. So that's going on right now, but we'll be finishing up school stuff, and we work all year round on what the summer programming is going to be, and that'll start when school is over. Since I saw you last, we took 15 of our youngsters to Day on the Hill, and we talked to all our legislators about the vaping law, which so far is getting not a lot of traction. But my kids came back, Mayor Chief Committee kids came back very jazzed, just. They were not discouraged. They still believe in the legislative process, so that's good. So even though they didn't get much of a response. We continue to work. Just this week, I'm doing 5 classes at Iowa State. We've been doing a lot more fraternities. You know, the Iowa State students are a third of our population, give or take, in Story County. So, you know, for years, we didn't really have much in with them, or, you know, we didn't have a lot of contact. But one of the things that we are doing, working with Iowa State on, is a collegiate recovering community. We're just starting in the early stages of that, looking at how young people college age who come to college who are recovering, how can we keep them recovering at college? Because college is not some place where people go to not drink, basically. And so, you know, what kind of environment can we create for those young people, be it AA meetings on campus or an honest-to-God dorm floor that, you know, really adheres to those kinds of issues and those kinds of needs for those young people. So that's something that we're working on with Iowa State, too. We continue to work with both the Story County Opioid Task Force, and Laura met with some of us last week to talk about sort of marketing going into the future, and what it really highlighted for us is we don't have, that task force doesn't have a clear vision on as to what they're doing going forward. So we've got to figure that part out, and we have a meeting next week, so we'll sort of be putting that to the group, saying, what is it you really want to do going forward? And I know that I said at the last meeting that in my head, they would probably go forward and do more education. And I think that that will probably be the case, but we'll know more after next Monday, because that really is up to them as a as a whole. But that group really has a very wide representation around the county, different providers, and so I don't think it's just going to stop. On the other hand, the Nevada Task Force on Substance Abuse had their big event planned for last Wednesday, and 2 out of 3 panelists had serious family emergencies, so it got postponed. So I was hoping to come and tell you a little bit about that, and mostly what I can tell you is we'll be meeting next Monday to see when we can reschedule that. I did want to mention that I mentioned the Health Promotion Club. You know, they've been busy with legislative things, and I gave you a letter that they sent to the legislature earlier this year, but Margaret came last Tuesday and spoke with them. Part of what we try and do with Health Promotion Club is they meet twice a month. One month they're working on some kind of project, working on the vaping bill or something like that, and then the other meeting, we try and have a professional from public health come in. These are all young people who are looking to have some kind of occupation someday. They want to grow up to be in public health. And so, and that means a lot of things. I've got several people who are looking at nursing school right now, another young person who's interested in prosthetics. I didn't see that coming. Some of them are looking to be not usually physical therapists. Pardon?
The one-armed man.
Yeah, the one-armed man. But so they're always impressing me with, you know, what they're going to do in the future. But it helps to have professionals come in to at least show them what some of that looks like. And so we did have Sherry Zook came in earlier this year. She's a public health nurse. We had one of our professors from the department come in a few meetings ago, and she works with Parkinson's patients throughout central Iowa. She's a music therapist by training, and she works with Parkinson's groups to help them sing, and that helps with their, you know, maintain their ability to swallow, which is sort of important. And so, you know, those kinds of things are fascinating to me. Wow. And
cool.
That helps these young people sort of understand the scope
wow.
of what can be in public health.
Excellent.
Okay, and so then the other thing is I sent you quite a bit of information on CBD and medical marijuana, thinking that we might be looking at some kind of action item. And, of course, in the meantime, last week, Jessica Reynolds came out with service announcement, the proclamation, that, in fact, there are no dispensaries in Story County, and so it is illegal to sell it. And there's been very interesting response to that.
That's an understatement.
That is an understatement. So it's my understanding that over the weekend, the Ames Police has somebody who's on light duty right now, an officer, who did go around to a number of the facilities, did not get much of a reception, particularly at Wheatsfield, who I guess not very happy with the officer coming in and reminding them. So that didn't go over well. I've not made any friends on this.
Yeah, and I think Jessica Reynolds did a really nice job.
Yes.
She came out in front, and she basically just said, there is no legal way to sell this. I'm sorry. We're just looking at the letter of the law. And I will tell you that while I usually don't like the Ames Tribune, sorry if that's going on record, but they did a very nice article.
Yeah, that was a big article.
It was
they
a big
named
article.
The places.
They named places, and they named why she was doing it. And it was very appropriate.
Yeah,
very appropriate. It was really well written. Very good. So the next
did
time...
Did those places pull it off the shelf after that?
Well, they had to. They had to.
Well, I'm not sure how much she's forcing.
Well, they legally couldn't have it on the shelf
to begin with. Right.
It was my understanding, and I did not see the ad, but it was my understanding that then Wheatsfield went on to run an ad that said they were running 25% off until they got rid of their stuff.
You gotta be kidding.
And I didn't see the ad, but I did go online, and I noticed it's not... There's no ad for that anymore.
I'm going to think I'm going to take my Iona grocery store sign down. But I think our Attorney General needs some congratulations because she's taking a lot of
flack
on our what?
County Attorney.
Or she can be the Attorney
County
General.
County Attorney, excuse me.
She may want to be. But
right,
yeah.
Exactly, right. County Attorney. She has taken a lot of flack, and it was upon us asking her mm-hmm. to do it, and she did it. So I think
she did well. I gave you a copy of both the Iowa Department of Public Health and Jessica's response is the last piece of paper I just gave you.
And the last what?
I gave you a copy of that.
Okay.
So
what did I do with that?
Polk County
just in
has
case
some,
you didn't have one to frame.
Does Polk County have some dispensaries?
There's one in Windsor Heights.
One, just one. So that's the only place you can go.
Right. That's the only place you can go in Des Moines. There's one in Waterloo.
But you'd have to have a thing from a doctor.
In theory.
To get it, either you can't just walk in without a prescription, right?
In theory, yes.
Yeah.
There is no pharmacist there. It's just salespeople. So there has been a bill, just to update you, there's been a bill introduced that would increase the number of manufacturers from 2 to 4 and dispensaries from 5 to either 13 or 15. Don't quote me on the difference. They also, in the legislature the other day, decided that they would keep it at 3% and not raise it to 13%. But I was told by someone from Counter Drug yesterday that part of that includes the fact that you are allowed to have 20 doses a day, which would put you in some kind of stratosphere. Anyway, so know that a lot of that is sort of still moving. To that end, you have three letters in front of you. One is from when this was all transpiring last week, the Mayor's Youth Committee, who's been working on this, decided they wanted to write you a letter. So did Prevention Policy Board. You have also a letter that the Health Promotion Club sent to the legislators earlier in February, and I thought you might like to see a copy of that. We got some responses back to that that were not particularly positive or encouraging. But one of the things that, and of course, I'm without kids. They should be doing this, but they've got school. One of the things that I want to just highlight, since you're just now seeing this, is their concern that should a dispensary come to Ames, and if we add another, say, seven or so, that is very likely, that they would still like to see some parameters, that they would still like to be proactive about this and limit where that dispensary could be and how that dispensary could market or promote that because of what they find. You know, we have a little guy on mayorship committee named Varun. Varun is great because he's just a very literal thinker. And he said, you know what, when I was a kid, anything they, he's a freshman. When I was a kid, anything that they told me was medical, I just took. It's got to be safe. That's what kids think.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, then, you know, you need, if that's what you want to say in the letter, let's, you guys put that together. And so they wrote this. And the other thing that they thought would be important that I thought was great is they want to require in Story County, but they'd really like it to be at the state, that anytime you get any kind of medical product involving marijuana, that there needs to be a state-issued explanation, just like you have with tobacco and cigarettes, of the harm that that might cause, which I thought that, I like that. Anyway, I like that, because they're just thinking ahead, like, how do kids think? They need to know what they're getting themselves into.
Well, if it's a drug, if they're considering this marijuana a drug, it should be dispensed by a pharmacist. Someone's got to hold these people accountable.
I don't make the rules.
And if they just have a dispensary and Blow Joe's there, who's to say that they're making sure that they have a prescription from a doctor?
And I guess that's one of the concerns, is this really follows the playbook that we've seen in other states.
Yeah, I have also a comment on that. I read this potent cannabis heightens psychosis risk, a very interesting article. And so because of that, I did a little bit of searching in the literature. And normally I go to CNBI, but that's very extensive. So I went Wikipedia and WebMD.
It's okay.
Like
the rest of us.
instead of the Library of Medicine. But what I found was very interesting, that I didn't realize that marijuana is cultured, propagated either to have very high THC levels,
yes,
or on the other hand, there is another variety that is produced to make very low THC levels. So there are two main compounds, which I didn't, you know, realize. Of course, we all read about CBD oil. And so I read about that there are, you know, two kinds of compounds. The one has the high THC, and the other one, the other variety, just has the low or almost no THC.
There are different hybrids, CBD oil.
Yes.
And they can be,
But the law states THC level, correct?
The law says that any CBD product is technically a marijuana product, and marijuana is still a Schedule I drug,
right.
And so any CBD is still considered a marijuana product.
It doesn't say THC in the law.
Yeah, so I looked this up, you know, so I looked up the references. I didn't have time, after I read this, I didn't have time to look up who tested what and how much was in there. So there is another issue there, how much CBD. So, you know, what I found, that often they just mention CBD, but CBD actually refers to cannabidiol.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
While THC is the other compound that is psychoactive.
Mm-hmm. Right. CBD is not necessarily psychoactive,
so
but THC definitely is.
Do the laws separate between these two compounds?
Not in this law, it does not.
That's interesting.
And you do not need THC to activate CBD to do the kinds of things that CBD is supposed to do, like help with the childhood epilepsy. But in most states, they include it because, I don't know why, because.
I think that,
yeah.
And of course, the idea of raising the THC level is you are much more likely to become addicted. Mm-hmm. And the addict is the best customer every time. So
But according to WebMD, that CBD oil is being used for people that may have epilepsy or muscle spasms, and they don't get a so-called high at all.
Well, 3% THC, which is what is allowed in Iowa, is pretty much what people were getting high on
in
the 60s.
So that answers the question. So the law states the THC level, not the cannabinoid oil level.
Not the CBD level, the THC level. It regulates
the THC
more now,
level.
The
right.
THC level.
So you're
right.
But
it can have
Everything
THC in it.
Everything you're saying is correct. But what you're saying is, but the law states the THC level is what they can only get up to 3%.
Right, at this point.
At this point. But any CBD oil has to be dispensed from that, no matter on it. Yes, you're right about that. You're right about that.
Because if you don't get it from in Iowa, they have those two manufacturers and those five dispensaries with the idea that it will only be 3% THC. It could have nothing in it, but it might only be 3% THC. You know, the concern is, like with vaping, you can vape anything. I mean, and I don't know if I mentioned this, but I took part in a webinar in January where it was hosted by a forensic scientist at University of Virginia Commonwealth, Dr. Michelle Peace. And her job is people bring her vaping devices and she figures out what was really in them. And was commented on how so much of what she is seeing of these devices, and you know, just anybody brings them to her, is often CBD or it is often marijuana. And in one case that was sold as CBD, it's just CBD oil, there's a synthetic chemical in there that has been responsible for the death of 40 people, a synthetic drug, and it only had letters and numbers, it didn't even have a name. So that is concerning. So if you're not buying it from, we hope, in Iowa, people who are regulating it very carefully, you don't know what you're getting. And so that's the idea behind don't buy it on the internet and don't buy it at the state fair, and because you don't know what you're getting. You know, the thing is, drug dealers are such pranksters. They're such jokesters that...
It seems to me that sometime from what I'm reading in the literature, they get the two compounds mixed up. CBD is just cannabidiol. While the other one is the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the THC. Two different compounds, but yet it looks like in the literature, when they hear CBD, they think it's THC, which it is not.
But sometimes it does include that.
But THC can be in it.
Yes.
THC can be present.
So you know, another website that you might be interested in is Science Daily. And they have their very own website just about marijuana, and it talks about this a lot. Yeah. Science Daily.
So basic marijuana has both of it in it, right?
Yes. But mostly, like when they first started doing quote unquote medical marijuana in Colorado, you know, that was a smokable form out there. It wasn't just CBD oil. And very oftentimes they would sort of breed the CBD out of it and bring the THC to a very high level.
That's what was
so
bad.
Yeah, you did feel better.
Yeah.
No matter what.
THC is the bad stuff.
It's the stuff that will rearrange the furniture in your head.
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right.
Way more than what you wanted to know.
No, actually, this is all good stuff. The more we learn about this is...
But going forward, speaking on their behalf, they would like you to consider maybe in Story County, even though we know, you know, Jessica has ruled on that, putting in place some kind of parameters that speak to... how you might mitigate and send a less confusing message to young people about this. So where would those dispensaries be? Just as I gave you another copy of what they did in Garner County. And my understanding was I thought Jessica was going to rule on how legitimate that was as well. And I'll give her a call to find out.
Yeah, I didn't know. So you're wondering whether or not we can make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors to make certain criteria for if we get a dispensary.
Right. In Colorado, 115 municipalities voted that they did not want a dispensary in their community, and that held. But the Iowa legislature currently is looking at a bill that would not allow individual communities to decide whether they could or they couldn't.
But we could decide, we could make rules conceivably that you can't be within a mile of a school.
Right.
I'm not so sure. First of all, from a county standpoint, each municipality has the right to not do what the county does if they want to do their own. So you'd be communicating with Ames, most likely. The odds of it going selling in Cambridge or settling there are small. But so that's the first thing, is that we're actually, the county is often at the bottom of that hierarchy. And then the other thing is, and I don't know, this is back to the county attorney's office, but I was just reading through here, looking at like messaging and that type of thing. And actually, when the legislature 2 years ago said that local communities and counties can't set a minimum wage that's higher than the state's, in other words, that's a state, buried in that legislation is also restriction on marketing of retail products. And that was all because at the time, Dubuque, at that same time in the legislative process, Dubuque was looking at trying to enact, phase out plastic grocery bags, you know, but, all right. And so that was slipped in. So all I'm saying is, I'm no attorney. That was 2 years ago, you know, okay, as far as what I remember. But I do remember that there is now a law on the books about the marketing and packaging, et cetera, of retail items. So you may have to figure that out also.
So
this would be a legal retail item.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So what we're going to need to do is we're going to need to find out, is there anything we can?
Right. I think right. Tobacco, I mean, I think that there are some cases where you can do that. Like, I think tobacco, you can't just advertise that close to a school. You can't, there's some stuff around that. Because when I was running that through the office the other day, they're like, oh, no, because we already know about this stuff. So I need to do
some
homework on that.
Okay, just check it out.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of questions, I think.
A lot of questions. I think if you can get us more information about
Absolutely.
What we can do, that would be fantastic.
Okay.
All right, great.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Never, never least.
Finally, we get a pair of Margaret.
Yeah, I am Margaret James, Environmental Health. I am just going to go super, super quick and just, you know, so a lot of the things you can just read right off of the report there. So I'm going to skip the wells and septics. It's getting busy. That's what I'm going to say. Pool and tattoo. Eight pool inspections, four tattoo inspections, other things going on. So I am now on that watershed working group. So those things that Leanne was saying, I can easily report to the board about what we're doing. We've got Linda Merkin on that board, and she is cracking the whip. She wants Mike and I to come up with an idea for water testing by maybe June or so. We are working a little bit with Isaac Walton League, and they have the a program where they're offering teaching like Iowa Water type concepts and how to do water testing and things like that for volunteers. The question would be money for test kits, or if we even wanted to send them to the lab, money for lab testing. That's a big cha-ching. Okay, so Crestview presentation, we've been working on that, coming along nicely. Dr. Passion enjoys the final slide. Don't ask me why. Let's see. I'm advising conservation on upgrading the Hickory Grove Lake Park wastewater treatment system. Right now they have a really beat lagoon, and they submitted to planning and development that they wanted to update their bathhouse, and so now is the time to replace the wastewater treatment. You know, we can't just keep adding these gems and not be responsible for the results of the gems at that park. Okay, so I'm working with them. It looks like COLA was out of the picture now, so we're kind of looking at treatment packages, filter, pack media filters, like like an Advantex.
Are they working with an engineer then, like we talked about, as far as the design?
Well, yes. I have this thing I have to fill out with the information, and then it'll go to the Advantex engineers and just kind of get an idea what we're talking about money-wise. And then we'll probably have to open it up to other types of filter media folks. We can't just say Advantex, you're the guys.
As far as design, though, I thought we talked about having a civil engineer. They had to hire a civil engineer to come up with their
numbers.
System.
They've done that. They've done studies, a few studies. The numbers are a little confusing at points, is the thing. So, yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. Yeah. If they went with Lagoon, it would have to be three cells, a pretty big project. Spend some time reviewing planning and development's proposed stormwater and erosion ordinance. Very complicated. I've written and handed out, Kathy and Matt and I have discussed this to great detail, the septic ordinance. So I handed that out to you with my comments on the right. Now, a while ago, back when Marty Chitty was here, we started doing that, and we were going to do it section by section, and it's going to be, 2025 by the time we do that. So I wrote the whole thing, and what I'm going to recommend is Mark could kind of review it very closely, and then maybe you and I could meet and go over it together, and you could, advise the board from there. You'll notice a slant of water quality protection, so testing of the discharging systems and identifying ways that we can do that. Did you have a question?
No, I was just nodding. Okay.
So hopefully then we will talk about that at the next meeting. So Mark, maybe in about a month we could get together and talk about that. Does that work for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. Lincoln Feeders CAFO came in asking for an ag exemption for solar panels. And they just happen to be the ones that have never wanted to put in a septic system for their CAFO. And they've got a bathroom and showers and this and that. It says right in there, and they are a permitted CAFO, okay, that we went through the master matrix and all that. So I'm just thrilled about this. So he never put that in. He claims that they don't use it. They've just turned off the water. So it's like, okay.
Now, which one is this?
Lincoln Township on 100th Avenue, just on the border.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Oh. And so refuse to do it. So then he comes in and asks for this application. So I sent him a letter, and I copied Mashoff, who supplies their pigs, and Legal and a bunch of other folks, saying, boy, I thought that for animal health, and you have to have a bathroom for the people so they can shower coming in and out. He came in on Monday to apply for a septic permit. I finally figured out a way to make him appreciate why he needs a septic system. So there we are.
Well, they need to shower.
Yeah, they've got a shower. They've got it all because back when they were putting it in, we did the master matrix. He insisted that Rick and it was Paul Toot at that time, and myself come and do a tour of this facility. He's very proud of it, and doggone, there was a bathroom and shower and all that good stuff, And
Where is it going?
Huh?
Where is it going to?
Oh, he never uses it. He never uses it.
I think they're required to. Every hog confinement we did, we had to put a shower, and they were required to shower.
Mm-hmm. But they're not required to use it.
So Mashoff got the message.
But we also put a septic system in.
Yes. They're the first ones that refused to do it.
Well, they can't do that.
So anyway, he's doing it now. Okay, and then, foreign animal disease preparedness. We went to that conference, and Keith Morgan is going to have a meeting, and I'll get you posted on that the next meeting. But so we're just kind of taking a look at that, getting prepared in case that there's an outbreak of that. I got to update you on the CAFO stuff. Ethan and I went down to Des Moines February 19th to do the appeal and to the Environmental Protection Council, and they voted to permit the the permit was approved as written, and the appeal was denied. So there was one, the person that was absent, one that voted no, and one, Nancy Kauser, who recused herself. So, there wasn't a lot of good discussion. There was very little eye contact. It just seemed like the decision was made before we got there. And then that evening, the Board of Supervisors had a special meeting, and I'll let you just kind of, in two sentences, sum that up if you want, Laura.
Sure. It was a big meeting to allow people to weigh in on the possibility of us passing a resolution that would go down to the state legislature and the governor, asking for, first of all, to have the matrix opened up for comment and review, and second of all, support for a moratorium, to call for a statewide moratorium, not us locally, but a statewide. And we had, of the people who were there, about 50% of them were for the moratorium, 50% were against. There were a few people that spoke out against even the resolution, but even you had people who were against the moratorium who were okay with asking for it to be reopened. So we ended up passing 1964, not 1967. You've got them both on here.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Sorry, yes.
We ended up on a 2-1 vote going with a support for a moratorium.
For a moratorium.
I'll just pass on to you, Margaret. Appreciate your help. The poor staff had to schedule three nights. You know, yeah, we got snowed out twice, okay? So we were down to maybe 150 people attending as opposed to the 300 originally we expected. I got a request from someone who's a leader in Farm Bureau here in the county level, who would like to see the conversation continue. And he wished that I hadn't gone every other person for or against. He wished that there'd been allowed to have exchange. So maybe there's an opportunity, if I set it up, to go ahead, you know, have the board do that again, to have further dialogue that the Board of Health could come to. Dr. Passion was there at the end.
Yeah. Yep. It was very interesting. I think what lawyers did a very good job was when it got a little testy, when people started saying things that were, mm-hmm. And she said, okay, wait, we're keeping this on a high level. There's not going to be anger. There's going to be no threats. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice. They were nice enough to listen to.
It was a very interesting meeting.
Yeah, it was.
So where are we at? We have a moratorium?
No, we don't. We don't have the ability on the state, on the county level, to pass the moratorium. We can only ask and add our name as a county who would like it. We're now 25 counties in the state who would like to have a moratorium until this is reviewed. And no one's calling for a permanent moratorium. So, we have nothing. We have this resolution, you know, to go down to the state. And unfortunately, because we got snowed out the two times, as far as making an impact this year, there was no even impact per se and stuff. So getting it fully distributed, I'm going to do after they pass the second funnel, you know, on that. Our local legislators were all informed. But, you know, might as well wait until they take care of everything down there, because this is going to be something going forward, that you know, we'll register with the other ones. But everybody can go ahead and expand their CAFOs or build new CAFOs according to the rules that are in play right now.
The current rules.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that kind of disturbed me about this whole debate is how little control we have. I mean, that's what really bothers me. Everyone talks about local control, and we have none with
this.
There's none. If they meet their criteria, which is basically a failing grade on a test.
The matrix thing.
Yes.
And then they go up,
and that's it.
The appeal process, too, is, and what you can even appeal on, is very heavily weighted toward the producers also. Mm-hmm. And you have to appeal just on water quality. It has to be just one of three items that impact water quality. Yeah, and basically, unfortunately, health issue wasn't one of it. It was more about impacting water. So,
But you know that's why it's so intriguing to this health impact and assessments. That to me sounds like a very, very good way to go. I mean, because how's the legislature gonna ignore that? Though they conceivably could and do. Many health issues.
I think Leanne's done a good job on that. She spent a lot of time working on that.
Right. So that would be really nice if we could help with that. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
I had forgotten we'd even been mentioned last year, but it's quite comprehensive. Yeah. So thanks.
Sounds good. Right.
Okay, and then I just wanted to mention that Kathy stepped out of her comfort zone and gave a talk to a group of realtors. The biggest point that she wanted to get across was that we no longer require testing and inspection of wells at time of transfer, but encouraging all the realtors to recommend that the wells be tested. So, and we got comments that she did a great job, so woo-hoo, Kathy.
Well, you know, the only reason we're not doing it is because they passed that law last year that we didn't know about, didn't have a clue about, that we can no longer do it.
Cool. And you lived?
Yeah, she lived. And let's see, complaints, horse manure, and Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park, sewage everywhere, apparently. So here we go again. And then we did have another individual who used to own a trailer park on the on Lincoln Way. You know who I'm talking about. He submitted a complaint to the ombudsman against planning and development. So he was in, and he did get all his paperwork filled out, so I think he's happy again. So, but that was regarding the hoop house that he was working on.
The hoop house.
Okay.
And I think that's all I have. Anyone have questions?
Your definition of a bedroom there.
Uh-huh. That's a tough one.
If that's on a lower level, like a basement, if you don't have an egress window, it's not a bedroom?
Probably not. I mean,
do you have to have that in there somewhere?
No. Well, because we don't have a building code, we really can't, you know, an egress could be a hole in the wall or, you know, so there's really no good way to define it, but this issue comes up over and over and over again.
You know, in real estate, they do define a bedroom. It has to be a certain height, and it has to be a certain,
80 square feet,
and it has to be a certain height, like 6 feet or something. And so that would be, because you can have a room up in the attic that people sleep, but it doesn't meet criteria for a bedroom.
The State Building Bureau leaves it up to the counties and cities to define it.
We don't require an egress window in the bedroom, in the basement?
There's no building code.
Only if they're rented.
Only
if they're rented.
Unless you have egress.
But not
on the
county.
Right.
Well,
the city has.
But we're not doing septics for cities, most usually.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, sorry. Go ahead.
I have a question about the Hickory Mobile Home Park.
Okay.
All right. So there's sewage out there.
They got it fixed.
Oh, okay.
It's a grease ball or something, okay. But it was backing up and sitting under the snow for really a long time. So.
And did Ethan know about that legal, about your interacting on that one?
No. Matt went out there on a Saturday or Sunday, and then I followed up and met with DNR on Monday.
Okay. So there was a citation issued to them by planning and development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The ruling's now come down. Why don't you check in with Ethan just to make him aware that there was a complaint and a resolved? I think we would not go wrong with giving too much information to Ethan. This is a precaution.
Okay. Sure.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks.
We'll do that.
Great. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Anything else?
I'm finished, but do that soil.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Any comments?
None. Thank you.
Any comments?
Nope.
Comments?
I have none.
Comments? I'm sorry the meeting went so long. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.